Are we ready?
You know, increases health rates and all that.
Senator Bill, I'm sorry. The Subcommittee on Human Services will now come to order. Today is Saturday, ladies and gentlemen. June what? What's the date there? June 16th, all right. We're getting toward that time. I don't know about everybody else, but it's kind of welcome working on Saturday, just the fact that, yeah, it gets us closer to that day. Anyway, thank you all for being here. First bill of the day is going to be Senate Bill 931, A. Engrossed, Guyton Vice Department of Rivers and Mr. Britton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you said, we'll go ahead with Senate Bill 931A. I think our LFO analyst, Deborah Manthe, is tied up with another subcommittee, but she'll be in here to help you with the other bill, 2687, was it?
Yes.
Too much paper, Madam Chair.
I know, that's exactly what you're saying.
Senate Bill 931 creates a task force for a comprehensive obesity prevention initiative. As you can see on the A. Engrossed version of the bill, it would consist of 13 members. The discussion of how those members are appointed is really section one of the bill. If you flip over, fourth line, second page, the director of the Department of Human Services or his designee shall serve as the chairperson. It talks about the task force on line 10 submitting a report that may include recommendations for legislation to the interim committees during the 07-09 biennium that are related to health care and health policy as appropriate no later than October 1st, 2008. And the Department of Human Services shall provide staff support to the task force. The act is repealed down on lines 24 and 25 on the date of the convening of the next regular biennial legislative session, which would probably be sometime January of 2009. LFO has reviewed the possible fiscal impact of this bill and determined that there is no fiscal impact. For your information, I've handed out the staff measure summary for Senate Bill 931A that came out of the policy committee. It provides a very good review of the bill. And down at the bottom of the page on the staff measure summary provides some informative background information. 60% of adult Oregonians were found to be obese or overweight in 2005. And it discusses how most of those statistics are heading in the wrong direction, that more adults and children are becoming obese in Oregon than they were in prior years. With that, I will turn it back to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I was attending a national meeting of noble women, and we had a conference on obesity. And I came back home and visited several schools in my district. And I didn't really need to do that. All I needed to do was look at my granddaughter, who is 14, and the doctor called my daughter in, says that she has high cholesterol. At 14, high cholesterol, and her blood pressure was getting high, and she was 100 pounds overweight. And I'm saying, oh my God, she's a poster child. All of her classmates are in the range, not necessarily that much overweight. And out of the three schools that I visited, it was unbelievable how our kids not having PE in the classrooms anymore, and how they have all kind of junk food in the schools, and how, along with not exercising, I just felt that we had to do something. So I called our first lady and talked to her to get her involved in this. And so she's going to be visiting some schools with me in September. And on our own, we're just going around to try to motivate kids to be, well, along with the fact that of this task force, which she plans to be a part of as well. And I felt that we need to do something to help our kids, because you know what? That manifestation as they become adults become our problem, and it's really our problem now. So talk with Dr. Goldberg to see what we can do, and I want you to know he has been absolutely wonderful in helping to direct us. And we took the data from the health department, which has done, had done an excellent... Who's here from the health department? Well, okay, you're the health department. Okay, that. But they had done an excellent job, and I want to give kudos, Dr. while you're here, to the health department for the wonderful research that they had done. But especially want to give thanks to my staff, John Christensen, who gathered all of this information together to just show us statistically where we are and that things are not well with our economies. Dr. Goldberg.
Chair Carter, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bruce Goldberg, Director of the Department of Human Services. I think that Chair Carter has outlined things as well as Mr. Britton quite well. We know we have a severe problem in this state and in this nation with obesity. It's one of those underlying root cause problems that's driving issues in many of our programs. It's certainly related to the increase in our health care costs. It's related to the functional status and ability of many of our seniors. And probably the most tragic thing is the fact that we are now looking at a generation of youth in our country who, if the trend continues as it is, will have shorter lifespans than us. And that, to me, is the startling statistic. But like most problems, we tend to know what the problem is, and we're able to define it. The issue is, what do we do about it? And I believe we're at a place now in this state where we're ready to grapple with this. What the solutions are, I don't know that any of us have the immediate answer and the right solution. It's going to take getting good people around the table. It's also going to take the involvement of the legislature, and it's going to take a comprehensive statewide plan and approach to this where we have some consensus and an ability to move it forward. And I believe that's what this bill does. It really builds on the work that the Health Policy Commission and the Public Health Division did, that Senator Carter was alluding to. We've done a great job in putting out a report about the problem and, in essence, a menu of strategies and interventions that can be undertaken. The issue here is, how do we turn that into the plan that we all can agree to and move forward? I believe what this bill does is really marry together policymakers and legislators, as well as experts in the field, to help us develop that, so that we both have expert input as well as the political and the policy leadership to craft a plan and move that forward. So I think this is an important bill. We're very supportive and happy to help in any way we can.
Thank you, Doc. Any questions? Senator Russell?
Just a comment, Madam Chair.
Can we do something else? I'm going to open also a work session on Senate Bill 931, public hearing and work session. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You look at this epidemic of obesity, and you spend any time at all with it, and you shortly come to the conclusion, you know, of the magnitude of this problem. John McConnell from OHSU estimates that 62% of the increase, not 62% of the cost, but 62% of the increase of health care costs are directly related to obesity. I mean, this is a serious issue, certainly not just for this state, but this country. And I agree with the summations with this being an important bill. As we all know, this session has put a significant effort into fundamental systemic healthcare reform of how we deliver services. This is a critical piece. Senate Bill 931 is a critical piece in that equation. So I want to commend certainly not only Dr. Goldberg, but Senator Carter and Morris Anderson for bringing this forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you.
Senator Gordon's no winners. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I fully support the policy of this. I think that obesity is clearly an issue, and the attendant health issues that we're trying to deal with around diabetes and other things that are associated with obesity are things that we need to try to work with. I do have questions about the fiscal impact of this bill, because I see language in here saying, Mr. Director, that it will take your time or someone you designate's time, that your department will provide staff support to the task force. So I assume there's going to be some backroom things going on there in terms of research and minutes and all that kind of stuff, and that there's a potential for members of the task force to be reimbursed for travel expenses and other expenses. So is the intention of the department to just absorb the cost of this?
Chair Carter, Representative Morgan, members of the committee, I haven't looked through the fiscal impact statement. Based on what you've indicated, certainly the my time and the time in terms of staffing this, we believe are part of our role in improving the health and well-being of people in the state. Any cost that would be incurred in terms of travel, et cetera, I'm assuming based on that fiscal impact statement that we've indicated we would absorb.
So I'll take that as a yes.
Yes.
Can I answer? Senator Representative Morgan? On line 10, subsection 9, the task force shall, line 13, members of the task force who are not members of the legislative assembly are not entitled to compensation.
But they may be reimbursed for necessary travel expenses and other expenses.
It is my intent as the crafter of this bill to make it clear to people that we will not pay for those expenses, and we get people who are willing to give their time for this, and that was a conversation we had with the people who helped us to craft.
Well, and I would expect, Madam Chair, based on my experience with these kinds of things, that the requests for reimbursement are minimal at most.
Right.
I just was wanting to make it clear that there was an expectation of who was going to be paying for this.
Exactly. Thank you very much.
Any expenses would be paid then by us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for bringing the measure forward. And I would just like to say that we need to be aggressive in our efforts to address obesity in our Oregon community. Is it appropriate to use the word epidemic, Dr. Goldberg, to define where we are?
It was in the data.
And what's so ironic to me as I sit here with a history of serving on Ways and Means, subcommittees and the full Ways and Means Committee, is that we actually declined federal funds several sessions ago,
right,
that would have allowed us to move forward on an obesity initiative.
That's right.
And at the time that we declined the funds, I thought it was so outrageous and unbelievable. But we're back now, and we're looking at this in a proper manner. And this task force is something that can help us define a campaign. That's what we need in the state, that is about Oregonians getting healthy. And I applaud you again, Madam Chair, for bringing this forward, but I also think there's a lesson here for Ways and Means. We're supposed to be leading the state, and we're supposed to be anticipating future needs of our of the people of the state. So let's definitely be mindful of the lesson in this. Thank you.
Representative Nathanson?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We are in work session committee, so please.
Thank you. Earlier in the session, when we were receiving presentations from the department on various programs related to children, adults, and families, and presentations on public health, for example, and also a presentation on a proposed Healthy Kids program, I was frankly disappointed in the lack of ability or initiative that the department was able to take in the area of prevention as it relates to nutrition. We were talking a whole lot about prevention as it relates to use of certain kinds of drugs. Mm-hmm. But we were not, there really was nothing in the area of nutrition, and this is every bit as big a problem. And I was very frustrated that pretty much the response I got, what are we doing in response to nutrition or nutrition problems when we identify them in children, it was all reactive. If a doctor identifies there's a problem, then a child could receive information or counseling on nutrition. That would be part of the response, but there really was nothing proactive. And so I'm happy to see this may be a little jump start to something that I think we should have been taking the time to do. We should have been doing it before now because we already have many thousands of people whose health is at risk and whose personal budgets as well as the state budgets are being stretched thin because of health problems related to obesity. So I'm happy that this is a little bit of a kick to let's get some more action in this area.
So the winners, my apologies.
That's quite all right, Madam Chair. I too want to thank you for bringing this forward. I think that this may be one of the most important bills when we do this session. And I say that because if you, I had, you can call it an opportunity, but I had the opportunity while I was home recovering from my femur bypass. And if you saw some of the medical clips on TV and saw not only among children, but adults to where we're having to go to bariatric surgeries, where you're seeing the gross obesity that is occurring in our society, it is an epidemic. And so, you know, we have this issue where we have to, one, get control of those who are already overweight, and then to prevent the generations from becoming overweight. And so I see this as something that could very well be, I think, a very, very important discussion. You mentioned PE, and I think those of us who believe when we abandon and discontinue physical education in our school system, you know, which lend itself to not getting the kinds of exercises that we need. So it could very well be, I think, in my estimation, and just looking at the epidemic, probably one of the most important pieces of legislation in this session. Because certainly those of us who work in the healthcare committees recognize not only the fiscal impact, and we talk often at this committee about the financial impact, but there's something else that we don't talk about. Disease means discomfort or disease, and obesity brings with it a lot of disease, discomfort, and a lot of premature other issues. So, Madam Chair, I want to echo that I'm glad that you have brought this bill forward, and those who worked in the crafting of it, I think, is an extremely important piece of legislation.
Further discussion? Senator Kotak?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also agree. I think we need a statewide coordinated effort on all, not only for children, but for adults on obesity prevention and hopefully reduction. But I also would like to remind folks that, especially the members on the full committee, there are a package of bills waiting in Ways and Means related to improving physical activity in the schools in terms of physical education requirements. And in addition to the school nutrition bill that was passed, those things could be very helpful at this point to jumpstart some of this. I know those bills have not moved yet in Ways and Means, and so that's something you can support. I would hope you bring that up, because improving physical education requirements in the schools is one way to get kids moving. So it's one thing we need to do. So thank you.
Further discussion?
You ready for a motion, Madam Chair?
I would love that.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 931A to the full committee with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Westland moves Senate Bill 931A engrossed to the full committee with a do-pass recommendation. Comments? Objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Senate Bill 931 has passed. Can I volunteer on the health side? Thank you, Representative Gerard Mandel.
Yes.
I'm not sure I'd go that far.
I will carry it to the full committee and to the floor of the Senate. Thank you. Because during the public session on 9:31, open the committee, Ms. Manthey is here. A hearing and work session on House Bill 2687A relating to persons subject to regulation by Oregon Board of Licensed Professionals, Counselors, and Therapists. Okay, so I'll take back the work session and have a hearing.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. You've got lots of people signed up for testimony, so I'll just take a few minutes to briefly kind of outline. I think at your places you have a packet of information. It's an overview that I sent out on Thursday that just briefly hits the highlights, the fiscal impact statement. I believe there's a staff measure summary there. The bill comes to you from the Senate Committee on Health and Human Services without recommendation. The bill requires health benefit plans to provide coverage for services rendered by licensed professional counselors or licensed marriage and family therapists acting within the scope of their practice if the plan covers services by a physician, psychologist, clinical social worker, or nurse practitioner. It also adds the licensed professional counselor and licensed, I'm sorry, I have to keep looking at the licensed marriage and family therapist to the definition of outpatient services. It increases the cap for civil penalties assessed by the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists, requires the board to employ one or more persons to perform investigations and aid in enforcement of their statutes, and prohibits the use of the licensed titles in promoting or advertising services unless the individuals are actually licensed. There are, it's my understanding there will be a couple of proposed amendments. Ms. O'Sullivan is on your list, and DHS has a minor a suggested amendment that would protect their AMD counselors. LFO will have also a technical adjustment, if you will, to remove the language about requiring the hiring of a position. It's, again, more of a technical, but those are the kind of issues that would be better addressed in the budget process as opposed to in statute and a policy bill. And I think, Madam Chair, that's it, so I'll stop talking.
I'd like to call the department up last, if you don't mind. Let's hear this, and then I'd like the department to do the cleanup for this. Thank you very much. Calling people 100 miles away, Mary Lou Brophy, good to see you. And is this Matt Louie? Good. Please come forward. Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am Mary Lou Brophy from Jacksonville, Oregon, down in the Rogue Valley, and I represent the Coalition for Consumer Protection and Choice in Mental Health Care. We're a grassroots group, so we're all volunteers, and we are a statewide group, but I'm sure you've heard from some of our people in the last day or so. But I want to thank so many people on the committee for supporting this House Bill 2687, which is a bipartisan bill co-sponsored by Representatives Buckley and Esquivel and signed on very graciously by Representative Boone and Senator Alan Bates, who is my senator. We have strongly considered this bill, and I have just talked with Patty O'Sullivan about the amendment proposed by DHS. I want to make very clear that I myself have worked in the many years I've been licensed, almost 26 years as a licensed psychotherapist. I've worked in the field of chemical dependency and have worked with certified alcohol and drug counselors for whom I have tremendous respect. And when we designed this legislation, in our bill, the A.M. Gross version of the bill, on line 34, it talks specifically about mental health services. So we were very cognizant of not including alcohol and drug services. In other words, a certification in alcohol and drug counseling was a separate thing. And there are other people who may certainly use the word counselor. Pastoral counselors, financial counselors, and to address the prior bill, weight counselors. So this was really a bill that was only pertaining to mental health counselors. But in talking with Patty O'Sullivan, having worked in mental health agencies myself, I certainly understand her need to protect her people. And so with that in mind, even though I have a reservation, since I don't know all of the national health professions who certify, I would have no way of knowing. And my biggest issue has always been protecting consumers of mental health who cannot tell when they look in the yellow pages whether or not someone has appropriate education, whether or not they've ever been checked out by a board, whether or not they have a code of ethics to which they must abide. When you are operating under the auspices of a board, that board checks you out, and if in fact a client has any ethical issue with the way you practice your mental health service, they are then able to phone the board and have a redress of grievances, have a hearing. It is imperative that there be some accountability loop for people in mental health practice. So with that in mind, I want to tell you that I checked with our members of the coalition board. They were all ready to have a fee increase because we are a fee-based agency. We will not cost the state money, and we are willing to pay for an investigator ourselves by raising our own annual licensing renewal fees. And also, you know, there will be more proposals on how we will pay for this. So hopefully, I mean, our intention has been to not cost the state money, because I know that, frankly, you're strapped and competing for a small amount of funds. So thank you very much.
Okay. Mr. Nui?
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Matt Nui. I'm a licensed professional counselor from Roseburg, and I respect other coalition members' preparation for today. I would like to defer some of my time to them, if you don't mind. I'll be available for questions later.
Sure. Thank you. Jenna Nicol, Dr. Jenna Nicol, and Jeff, and Dr. Jeff. Okay, I can tell you, Dr. Tudor. Dr. Nicol, good morning.
Good morning, Chair Carter, committee members. For the record, my name is Dr. Gina Nicol. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs. And I just want to put on the record, we've worked with this coalition on this bill. I think it is an excellent bill to provide more access, especially in the rural areas. But in talking to the number of LPCs and LMFTs that provide services, we think that also in the urban areas too. So we're very much in support of this bill. We would be glad to answer any questions. I think access is really the important part of this. I, many years ago, was an LPC, and now, of course, I do something a little bit differently, but I cannot tell you of what benefit this will be, enough. And so, good bill, do pass.
My first carrying of this bill was 1985.
Yes.
We've been trying this 4 years. Okay. Is it Tudor?
Tudor.
Tudor.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I appreciate your interest in this bill, and I support it. My name is Jeff Tudor, and I'm representing the 10 training programs that train individuals who can move toward a license in family therapy or professional counseling. And I'm a faculty member of the University of Oregon and the director of research at the Center for Family Therapy. And I want to say just a bit about the training that the students who can work toward this license earn. And I'll be as brief as I can be. one other comment about this. My job includes many tasks, but my primary responsibility is to ensure that individuals who receive our training are competent to deal with the complicated issues they deal with in working with the Oregon population. Family type education is recognized by the U.S. government as one of the core mental health professions, and our program is regulated by the Oregon Board for Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists and is nationally accredited by the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy. And our students have to demonstrate that they have mastered 128 core competencies in the program last 2 years. The competency areas include the following categories: clinical assessment and diagnosis, treatment planning and case management, therapeutic interventions, legal issues, ethics and standards, and research methods. They earn 73 graduate credits, including 22 advanced classes spanning at least 2 years. They earn 500 client contact hours. It includes live and videotaped supervision, so the supervisors see directly the work that our students are doing, so it's not hypothetical, it's very lived. They complete a 12-month internship at our family therapy center. They also complete a 12-month internship at a community-based agency. They're getting real-world experience. They have assignments that specifically address diagnosis and assessment, and literally hundreds of experiences that supervise, where they have an opportunity to review diagnosis protocol, treatment assessment, and then plan accordingly. They study empirically validated therapies and have a number of comprehensive written and oral exams across the lifespan of their plan of studies. And following degree completion, they must earn 2,000 post-degree contact hours, direct contact hours with clients, under the supervision of someone who's been approved by the state of Oregon. And they also must complete a national marital and family therapy exam before they can be licensed. So in my opinion, the training is of high caliber and very rigorous. Well, thank you for your attention.
Questions of either of these panelists? Thank you. Thanks for being here. Dr. Nelson and Mr. Martins, Budland.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Madam Chair Carter and members of the committee, my name is Dr. Brian Nelson. I'm a counselor from Eugene, Oregon, in private practice. I also work at the hospital there in the psychiatric department. I'm a member of this coalition, and I want to express gratitude to this committee. Many of you have gotten to know members of our coalition over the past several months, and we thank you for your consideration of this very important bill. I just want to briefly tell you who we are. We've got Dr. Tolentino over here, a psychologist in private practice. We have Drs. Todal and Miller from the University of Oregon. We have Marcus Berglund here, who's been in academics and private practice. Matt Newey, a clinical director for a nonprofit agency. We are skilled, competent professionals who have been underutilized in this state due to insurance limitations since 1985, or, you know, when I believe approximately the early 90s or 1985. So the time for this bill is now. HB 2687 is working towards consumer protection and greater choice for the consumer among LPCs and LMFTs, who are lower cost providers. HB 2687 is about free trade and fair market competition. This bill is about lifting the state sanction on some 1,800 competent, qualified LPCs and LMFTs so that we can provide the clinical services to more Oregonians that we have been trained to provide. It's consumer friendly, it's business friendly, and it's economically sound. And there are 14 of us here that can answer questions about the education, training, medical cost offset. We've looked at this issue inside and out, and we are here to fully endorse this. We appreciate your time and consideration, and ask for your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Excuse me just for a moment. Senator Shortley.
Thank you. I would just like to thank the witness for bringing forward the economic side of the argument. I think that's a part of the argument that we don't hear enough about in this process. But your comments about this being a free trade and fair market competition issue is your point is well made. Thank you.
Well, the issue becomes many primary physicians are finding themselves in the position of a counselor. And whether we know it or not, when we talk about cost containment, they are not trained as counselors or therapists. And then they would feel uncomfortable. And it would be surprising if you would look at the BMA in terms of the numbers of doctors that give medication related to psychological issues and how many of them have come under fire. So this is an issue that the legislature needs to do something about, else we're going to continue to have this conflict that we have in this state and in this system. Number one, it's going to ease the cost in terms of people who don't have the skills for doing it anyway, that they be appropriately sent to people who are trained and educated in this particular area that is going to make more sense. Representative Garrard, then Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, ma'am. Sir, good morning.
Good morning.
If we were to pass this legislation, what would be... could you give me a broad estimate of the impact on the number of clients that the average counselor would have after the passage of this legislation as compared to before?
Madam Chair and Representative Garrard, I can tell you that I turn away one client a week. My private practice is part-time, since I work at the hospital full-time, but I turn away one individual a week. And I speak for my colleagues who turn away clients weekly. Those of us that are in full-time practice, such as Dr. Tolentino, I would guess he turns away 2 to 3 clients a week because they will not be reimbursed, or we will not be reimbursed for the services. And so what we do is we end up sending these clients on a, well, check in with your provider panel, and this is what you're looking for. And for someone in crisis, that can be one hurdle that they don't necessarily want to take. So some of them give up trying to find the right credentials on the right provider panel. Thank you for your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at the yellow sheet that's been provided to us, the medical cost offset.
Yes, that's what I was prepared to testify on.
I'd like to ask something about it.
Sure.
Mention it. This is a really interesting piece of information. We hear a whole lot the last few months about the need to address the cost of health care. One of the first things here I wanted to ask about, physicians unnecessarily burdened. In some cases, a physician's workload is tremendous, and it's hard for someone even to get in to see a doctor when you feel like you need to. It says 50 to 70% of a physician's normal caseload, that's a big percentage, 50 to 70, consists of patients with medical ailments significantly related to psychological factors. I understand the statement. I think I can imagine several kinds of examples, but for the record, could you provide us with a few just sort of ordinary type examples of the sorts of ailments that someone would see a doctor for and need one or more doctor visits and medication for something that could have been treated by some other kind of counseling and maybe resolved before it got to the point of needing additional medical help?
Absolutely. Madam Chair Carter and Representative Nathanson, yes. Primary care providers, they deal with muscle tension, anxiety, insomnia, low energy, headaches, gastrointestinal problems. These are common symptoms of anxiety problem, depression, stress. So these are the types of problems that clients present to their doctor for, and they are typically prescribed some type of psychotropic medication, which is sometimes appropriate. But we believe that we can, well, we know we can treat these problems effectively, and we believe that sometimes skills are much better than pills, and at lower cost over the lifespan of an individual. Learning the skills generally is a cost savings tool to deal with anxiety and depression. So those are common ailments that a doctor would see that have a psychological origin to them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to follow up on Representative Gore's question, because we heard this bill in the House Human Services and Women's Wellness Committee and passed it out with a very strong DPAS recommendation, and Mr. Newey from Roseburg was there back in March, and I highlighted a piece from his testimony then, which I think would be helpful. And back in March, he wrote in his testimony, in the past 8 business days, I received 9 child family referrals for mental health services. I could only serve one, and this was because the child was on the Oregon Health Plan. The other 8, I had to refer to other providers. Now, this is the important part. The other 2 providers who specialize in child and families, one a licensed social worker, is scheduling 4 weeks out, and the other, a PhD, is scheduling out 3 weeks. So I think the access issue is to be, you know, folks who can't get insurance reimbursement, obviously, you know, they have to have a business, so they referring these folks out and taking much longer to have care for them, and then increased costs because of that, if they even go and find another professional that they can see based on their plan. So, again, I think that's a really good point about access. So, thank you.
Senator Winters? My question, can you give me a description? And did somewhat when you talked about with George and Nathan's question of what is meant by less severe mental illnesses.
Less severe mental illnesses? Sure.
Is that something?
Yes, Chair Carter and Senator Winters, are you looking at one of the specific points on the handout?
Yes, number 3.
Which number?
It's number 3. What are less severe mental disorders, diagnosis, or conditions most amenable to psychotherapy?
I can answer that. And actually, number 3 isn't on my sheet because I was eliminating a lot of this due to time constraints. But yeah, less severe mental illnesses would be situational factors. A divorce that a person is going through may cause short-term panic attacks or heightened anxiety. Sometimes mild depression would be less severe. Sometimes a simple phobia can be treated. Social phobia, anxiety that occurs when you're in groups or talking to people. Those are all very amenable to treatment. So those are less severe disorders. More severe disorders, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, illnesses of that nature.
Do you follow, Madam Chair? Because stress, and I heard you mention stress earlier, stress also can manifest itself in psychological, in physiological disorders.
That's correct.
So how do you handle, and I guess because there is a line between physiological and psychological issues.
Mm-hmm.
So how, if I came to you and I'm exhibiting stress, but there's some underlying other conditions, what would you do?
Oh. Well, one thing I'm going to do is emphasize exercise and nutrition. Those are always the building blocks. Then we're going to start looking at your coping skills, how you deal. we're going to start looking at your coping skills, the choices that you make in terms of, do you pile on too much in your life? Is there sufficient time for
relaxation?
Free treatment
here, no. I know that's what Ms. Brogan was laughing at.
We're going to look at your thinking, your thought patterns. Some people are just characteristically gloomy and negative in their thinking. Some people are very self-critical. All of these things cause anxiety. anxiety and add to a person's stress level. So the thought process, the coping skills, relaxation, sometimes problem-solving skills. Many people are facing a dilemma in their life and they need a sounding board so we can give them a perspective. So those are some pretty general things that I would do.
But if I had if I had a physical, because often stress does accompany with it sometimes some physical disorders, and particularly in the autoimmune disease components. So if that was determined, what would you do? It's a serious question, because that often occurs, particularly with those who have autoimmune issues, and stress is a high component of those issues.
That is correct. And if I'm understanding your question correctly, Senator Winters, yes, we would refer to a physician if we think that there could be a thyroid problem or some other physical ailment. But in regard to what I would do to help you lower your stress level, is that what you're asking?
No.
Referral is what you said.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Okay, Representative
Good. I would like to ask Dr. Nelson to please just plan on staying here until June 29th.
Okay. to help.
We're going to need it.
Exactly. Yeah.
We didn't give you a chance to testify.
I'm Marcus Bergen, Madam Chair, and this time.
Yeah, Doctor, you might have some more questions. You're on fire now.
Esteemed committee members and Madam Chair, thank you. I'm Marcus Bergen, President-elect of Oregon Association for Marriage and Family Therapy, and not in private practice. I've been in community mental health agencies for 16 years and academics as well. So many points have already been made, both today as well as many other times, with some very familiar faces and those very supportive of mental health issues, especially Representative Kotek, Senator Carter, and Senator Gordley, and that is so very much appreciated, as well as you, Representative Boone. I just wanted to make a couple of comments about some of the conversation right here in the moment. Your point, Senator Carter, about doctors not having time nor the training, as much as doctors are looked upon as gods in some way, they certainly are not. They're human beings, and they don't have the mental health training of a psychotherapist. Nor do they have the time. So it's not about an either-or situation where is it a counselor or a doctor, or to answer your question, Senator Winters, a doctor or a counselor, and it's not a referral past the buck. It's a collaboration. It's a team effort. We're team players here, and it's not a pissing match over turf with licensed social workers or with the four other qualified mental health providers, psychiatrists, psychologists, psychiatric nurse practitioners, and social workers. We're all on the same team working for the mental health benefit for the citizenry of Oregon. And so I want to clarify that, because this oftentimes gets perceived, oh, this is just a turf issue. No, it is not. It is for the mental health status of the citizens of this state. And that has direct and indirect consequences for every one of us. And I won't go into detail about that, both monetarily. 10 years ago, I remember we knew that $90 million were going to be spent or cost, I should say, for those not able to go to work. The emotional scars, as an emerging family therapist, how these emotional scars get transmitted cross-generationally, what are the costs of not providing services? So without going into great detail, I think that's a question well worth asking ourselves, as Native Americans did. How does this affect seven generations down the road with us? So the collaboration piece with not just other mental health providers, but especially with doctors, out of Rochester, New York, Susan McDaniel, she works very closely in her marriage and family therapy program with doctors, such that her program is entirely located within hospitals. She said that the amount that you were referring to, Representative Nathanson, about most mental health issues being first addressed by doctors, only half of those clients or patients who tell the doctor about their concern, only half, if that, go on to actually pursue mental health treatment with a therapist. So there's a huge disconnect between the world of medicine and the world of psychotherapy. They are not the same, but they are definitely connected and should be used in collaboration. I will cut off everything else I was going to say other than the proposed amendment. I am speaking to a good amount of people here who did not envision any amendment. But as I said, we are team players. We want to do what's best. We've gotten legal opinions that say there is no doubt that the wording as crafted, and it was intentionally crafted to be only providing or only affecting qualified mental health providers. No one else, not attorneys who you might call counselor, not a diet counselor, not a financial counselor. The legal opinions we've gotten say that's very clear in this bill. But I want to say I want to acquiesce to whatever you find most clear. It's the eternal grail for clarity, and working in the mental health field, all communication is miscommunication, and you need to dialogue to parse out what the meaning is. So, again, I urge you to do what's in your heart and in your conscience, but we do have legal opinion that says it's clear as is. So with that, I'll take any questions if you have any.
Questions? I think they asked so many of the colleague before you. Your pleasure.
Well, Madam Chair, if you're asking what would we like to see happen with the bill?
Hold on a minute. I'm just so ahead of myself.
Okay.
I'm just so ahead of myself. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Dr. Miller? And Ms. Patio.
Okay. I don't really have much to add. Thank you, Madam Chair. We agree with my colleagues in support of this bill. I'm John Miller. I'm the program director of the Family Therapy Program at the University of Oregon, a colleague of Dr. Todahl's who's spoken previously. I guess one or two points that I would make in addition to what has been said is around clinical service delivery and what this bill would mean with regard to providing services to the citizens of Oregon. In 1999, the Surgeon General of the United States produced a report on the state of affairs for mental health services in the country. And in that report, they said that it is as you were talking about before, about the way services are providing in the state and in the country are a problem. They found that half of the people who would benefit from mental health services never approach treatment. The reason they don't is because the service delivery system with regard to reimbursement and things like that makes it difficult for them to do so. The resultant cost of those folks not getting treatment is about, at the time, that was 1999, that's 8 years ago, was about $79 billion a year. And the way that shows up is through the missing work and through sort of other, they go to their primary care physician sort of to try to get services that way, which is an inappropriate way to sort of, it's not a good method to sort of get services. So it ends up to be more expensive in that way. And at the end of the report, basically they said the call to the country, to the legislators, to the sort of the people who make policy is to come up with creative ways to provide more methods for the people to get access to services. And so this is the one point I would make in addition to what my colleagues have said, which I agree with, is this bill would provide a more easy path for people to pursue mental health services. So I'll pause there. Any questions?
Questions? And Dr. Miller? Thank you. Ms. Sullivan. O'Sullivan, that is.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, my name is Patricia O'Sullivan. I'm the Director of Public Policy and Government Relations for the Department of Human Services. I have no idea my little clarification amendment would garner this much attention, but it has. The department, I'm talking today on behalf of the department and our Addictions and Mental Health Division. The department is very supportive of the open access that this bill will provide. That we have no problem with that. We were a little late in coming on the amendment that is the titling part of the bill that says what you can and can't call yourself. And while I appreciate that folks say they have legal opinions, I believe they do. I haven't seen them. So I have to go on who our legal people are, and that's Legislative Council, our AAG, and then the people within that program, our Addictions and Mental Health Program. Our problem with the titling is we wouldn't have a problem if it was just the entire title.
What line are you on?
I'm on page 3. I'm on line, it starts on line 33.
And it says, which many, many, many licensing boards have titling sorts of language in their statutes, not a problem. And we wouldn't have a problem if it was licensed professional counselor, licensed marriage and family therapist, not a problem at all. What we have a problem with is or any part of the title, which includes the word counselor, which includes the word therapist. And on our mental health side, all those folks are licensed in accordance with this and every other licensing board. On our A&D side, they have a little bit of a different process for assuring that they're qualified to do their job. And they're actually certified by an association. It's called the Addiction Counselor Certification Board of Oregon. It's not a public entity. It's a private nonprofit, and it has a national oversight around the nation. As you know, when people are in addictions treatment, they like to talk to people who understand addiction. And so many, many, many of our counselors out in our provider system are recovering alcoholics or drug addicts. They may not have master's degrees. They may not have all the educational qualifications that other boards and licensing boards require. But they do have the education, the hours, the oversight that this board requires. And they also have an enforcement arm. They are required by our rules to have this certification. So all of our provider system is there. Now, I understand what he's saying when it says mental health provider. However, out in the universe, out there in public sector land, let's say, and in the counties and in providers, the alcohol and drug addiction counselors are kind of considered under the mental health umbrella. And so I came upon this bill late. I went to the board staff, and they said it wasn't their bill, but didn't indicate whose it was, so I went to the sponsors, the first one listed, which was Representative Buckley, and he had no problem with the amendment, understood. I then talked to Charlie Cheeks in Legislative Council, who said, well, Patty, I don't think you need it. And I said, well, I think I do.
They didn't think you need it because they didn't think this bill would get this far.
Senator, okay, I'll take that at its word. So then I went home and I thought about it, and I didn't want to cause any trouble, so I thought, well, I'll take one more look and maybe I'll just withdraw it. I took one more look and I couldn't withdraw it. And then I talked to our drug and alcohol people again and met with Charlie again. And after I explained to Charlie my thought process of what this says, he said, well, maybe you better get it. So that's kind of where I'm at. There's some people say we don't need it, we'll be nice, but you know, if it's not in there and people forget they said that, then I don't know what will happen to our provider system for alcohol and drug. So long way of saying, this is a very simple amendment. It won't hurt the bill. We're supportive of the bill, and the department would appreciate it if we could, if you would move the -A7 amendments, which just actually makes the exemption very clear that it's also certified by a National Health Professional Certification Organization. And I did talk to Mary Lou Brophy, and we just actually met early, about 5 minutes before this hearing. And had we actually met and been hooked up earlier in the week, I think we could have worked out something a little more specific. But in hopes that this bill will pass, she indicated to me, and I hope she's not in her head, that she would agree to this to this amendment. And if there's any problems along the way, we'll come back in concert next session and fix it.
Question, Representative Boone.
And since I'm the only one here of the sponsoring members, I concur with that. And just wanted to comment on it is when we first started out, and I actually had a different bill, and we agreed to fold it into Representative Buckley's bill. One of my constituents, who consequently she came here to the building, asked for me to drop this bill, and then took off for Thailand. And thought that might be interesting to work overseas like that with her, but I couldn't figure it out. So agreed to go in with Representative Buckley, and the amendment was a surprise to me also.
But Dr. Miller? You still in hot seat, sir.
Oh, I want to see this go through because this is very important. And in my counties, at least one for sure that I know of, we're having some very serious difficulties keeping people without, I think their waiting period in some cases is longer than a couple of months. And the only way they get service is to, I hate to say this, commit a crime, so they get into that system and they get immediate treatment. So that's, that being said, and with no judgment whatsoever, I've actually told people that's a way to get in sooner. So this is a good thing to have. That's a sad state of affairs, but you said what I was going to ask you, so if we can not have a problem getting this through, whether or not this amendment is a problem, we'll work on it if we need to later.
Representative Morgan, then Representative Hotel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This, I think, is a very good concept, and I look at it from the perspective as a rural legislator, and this will definitely increase access for people in the rural areas of the state to the kind of counseling services that they need. One of the questions that I'm assuming you're at the end of your testimony sign-up list.
Yes, that's right.
One of the things that hasn't yet been covered that I'm curious about is that we're essentially adding another mandate to the health insurance arena, and I'm wondering if any of the HMOs or the insurance companies have come forward with any kind of discussion around how this is going to affect people's premiums, if the rates are going to go up because of this added piece.
Anybody hear from the insurance industry?
I'll call on you, Representative Boone. I'm too close to this bill because I've been trying since 1985. And so I just left it alone after the first 10 years because it looked like we weren't going to get it done. And this only ties into your question because in the sense that of how it makes sense. We have licensed social workers, and this is not against social workers, period. I want to say that. Social workers are not trained in psychology. They might have lower level requirements for psychology courses, but they don't have courses like counselors do with many years of psychology. And even though they're on a panel, they still don't address some of the issues that counselors address. I'm trying to be a little cautious here in what I say. And so in terms of how this would affect that panel, yeah, that panel, insurance companies would have to look at the fact now that we have social workers, but we have counselors really that are here as well. And it should not take anyway anything away from the cost of doing business, because social workers see a totally different group of people than counselors see. So, yes, to your question, in the sense that these people are now eligible for being a part of a panel, and that it is going to divide what insurance companies do now in terms of whether a social worker is paid as a panelist, and because they're already paid, but now they got to consider counselors. Mm-hmm. And that's it. So I don't know of any insurance person since they didn't say that they were here.
Just a follow-up comment to that. I'm not sure that the act of adding these people to the reimbursable pool of providers is so much what I'm concerned about, that it will bring more people in for treatment and increase the amount of people in treatment. And I'm curious if that would have an impact on the cost of insurance companies. But if there have been no companies that have come forward to talk about the impacts, my assumption would be that they are minimal and not something that would be an overriding concern here.
They're already in the pool. They're just seeing medical doctors as opposed to seeing psychotherapists. And so they're already in the pool of getting insurance money. And it's just that they're not being treated by professionals in the field. They're being treated by doctors, medical physicians, who don't have the qualification to do it. And I talked to my doctor about it, and he said, I'm glad, because I'd rather not have to make some judgments and just give people medication, something to relieve anxiety, when it could be something that is chemical or something that is of a higher order in terms of needs that people have.
So the assumption here is that this wouldn't provide services to a larger number of people?
I think the people that need the services are already in the system. It's just that they are not being directed to these people.
Oh, thank you.
Anybody else want to comment on that? I see a lot of hands. Representative Boone, then Representative Kotek, then the panel.
And I
both can join them. Do you want to join them? Who do you want to send? You want to send another representative up here? Ms. Patio, since we know your situation, why don't we allow some of the commissioners to come forward? And I want to serve you guys notice that your troubles have just begun. I want you to know that. So be ready to walk these halls starting Monday. If you want this bill, because this is just a hearing, I was so excited, I was about to pass it out, and the analyst reminded me this is just a hearing. So in order for this bill to go anywhere, you're going to have to work. Mm-hmm. Okay.
My comment was mainly around, I see this as part of Senate Bill 1, mental health parity, and a lot of what is going to happen, if not it already happening, that's prevented in nature, and Dr. Somebody Nielsen maybe brought it up about some of the lesser, or the, I can't remember the terminology, the lesser mental health issues. Maybe by treating something up front, you prevent a lot of the other more physical manifestations of the situation, of the condition. And also, it just extends out more. If someone needs to get some mental health therapy, they can do that and get reimbursed for it. That person can get reimbursed for it. Therefore, they're in the provider pool. And provide this prevention service before people have other things, become suicidal, whatever happens that might cause them to have to seek further treatment and more expensive treatment or longer term treatment. So I see what you're saying, but I see this as just extending the providers who get reimbursed pool, if you will, of treatment providers.
Mm-hmm. Knowing that John Powell is not here, should say something to all of us.
And I did not hear from anybody from the insurance industry at all on this. I can only speak for myself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's taken me a few minutes to jog my memory of what we talked about in the committee when we heard it in the policy committee, but Representative Morgan's raising some very good points.
Right.
This doesn't say that plans have to cover mental health issues other than what they're doing now under Senate Bill 1, but it does increase the access pool, which is what the issue is. But I do recall in the substantive committee we heard about, interestingly enough, licensed professional counselors and licensed marriage family therapists probably charge less than the folks who are currently getting reimbursed.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of just dollars and cents, I think we'll see some savings. I think the plans will see some savings. And some plans already reimburse these folks. It's just not consistent across the board. And that's what this does. It says if you're a plan and you're providing mental health services and you're also reimbursing licensed social workers, you also have to reimburse these folks. And hopefully more people will get a little more access to mental health care, because that will save money in the long run for primary care and other things. But again, I think we're all right. It's just about expanding the pool. Who can take these folks?
If I might, in the policy committee, Representative, was there any discussion on the part of the insurance providers at all?
I believe we had testimony from Regions, because they're one of the larger plans in the state that they're inconsistent on when they cover those folks. We heard testimony if Regions covers certain things through maybe an employee assistance plan, they might cover them, but if it's an individual plan, they might not. But then Regions in other states covers it. So it's a patchwork, and I think that's also a complicating factor for these professionals.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Senator Gordon, but also it came from Senator Morissette's committee. So will you defer to him, Senator?
I will, and I think there's somebody out there who wants to come up. And
are you a private insurer?
Senator Carter, Mike Becker with Regions Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Okay, so let's see if Ms. Brophy, do you mind changing?
No, okay.
No. Senator Morissette, go, and then Senator Senator Gordon, and Ms. Brophy, if you will change with Regions, I would appreciate it.
Well, I just want to get on the record that we did hear from Regents in my policy committee, and that's why it was sent here without recommendation. However, the same concerns were expressed in the committee about the importance of the bill, the individual versus the group coverage. It was not a strenuous discussion by Regents at the time. This bill has been one that we've worked and reworked and my policy. I feel very happy that it is in the Ways and Means Committee, and I urge that we move this bill. It is extremely important. It's a mental health parity issue. The mandate, so to speak, is not a significant one at all. We're already covering people in the same category, and to me it's a no-brainer that we cover, that we support this bill. So with that, I'll anxiously await Regents' comments.
Senator Gordley, and then Regents.
Well, I'd like to hear from Regents first.
Okay.
And I have another issue.
Okay.
Senator Carter, members of the committee, my name is Mike Becker with Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. I'd like to clarify two points briefly. First off, in regard to expansion of access to services, yes, this bill will expand access to services. It is important to note, however, that there is one significant expansion under this bill that does not apply to the rest of the counseling services, be they psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers. And that is, under this bill, if individual insurance provides access to physicians, psychologists,
clinicals. Tell us where you are.
I am in section 2, page 1, section 2, starting at line 7.
Okay.
The point is, this bill applies to both individual insurance plans as well as group coverages. And if an individual plan provides coverage for a physician, which all individual insurance does, then they must also provide coverage for LPCs and LMFTs. Now, the importance of that is that under mental health parity, SB 1, as passed in the 2005 session, that parity only applies to group coverages. So what we have done with this bill is expand the scope of mandated coverage for LPCs and LMFTs to the individual plans. So that's the first point that needs to be kept in mind here. The second is something that the actuaries tell us, and that is that any time you expand the number of points of access, you will expand the cost of services. Now, I know there is the offset of these are lower-priced services that we receive from LPCs and LMFTs, and that is correct. But when you expand the universe of providers by an additional 1,800 in the state, there will be an overall increase in costs.
Thank you. Question? Representative Morgan and Representative Boone.
Is there any way at this point in time to give us some kind of a ballpark estimate about what we're talking about in terms of increased costs here? And what I'm looking at is looking at this from the perspective of people that will be paying those health insurance premiums. What is the potential impact from that perspective?
Representative Morgan, members of the committee, I do not have that number.
Do we have enough? If I might have a follow-up,
sure.
Madam Chair, are we talking something significant or something minimal?
I think, Representative Morgan, I believe we are talking relatively minimal amounts.
Thank you.
Senator Gordley.
My question is not for Regents. It's a question and a measure of minutes. So if Representative Kotek wanted to stay with...
I'm
fine for now.
Well, I'd like to just follow up on that, too, and that we went over that in the Senate Bill 1 discussion repeatedly. And the saving grace, if you will, for that your question is the savings on the other end of the cost. Potential costs for businesses that if people were treated up front, they wouldn't be missing work, they wouldn't have the additional medical costs, etc. And I don't want to get into the cost thing, but I think you're right. I think it would be fairly minimal because you're just expanding a little bit. And I would be interested if there's any way to find out what it is, just for curiosity's sake, but I would bet that it's very minimal, very little, and it would almost be taken over by the savings on the other end.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Marcus Griglin, Madam Chair, and esteemed committee members. I have some information from the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy, which I've provided to other committee members in Senator Morissette's committee and in Representative Tomei's committee, on which some Representative Kotek has referred. Basically, it's looking at five statewide studies, the most recent being Massachusetts and Maine in 2005, but also North Carolina and Virginia and Texas are included, that show the results carried out by the respective Bureau of Insurances for those states. They found that the costs range from 0 to 1/100 of a percent. And that's not even taking into account what you're saying, Representative Boone, which I think is the biggest argument for it. What are the costs of not providing it? So that's the statistic, and I can give you those full reports if you request, Representative Morgan, but it's 0 to 1/100 of a percent effect on premium.
Let me ask a question. Do any of the rest of you have another committee we need to meet with?
I will have.
I have mine's not till 1.
Yeah.
I do have a question, Madam Chair, because he brought up an interesting point, and that Constance talked about mirroring this with Senate Bill 1, and yet he brought the point that this expands actually Senate Bill 1 because Senate Bill 1 dealt with group and not individual. Mm-hmm. And this does both, as I understand the comments that was made by Mr. Becker.
Senator Gormley?
Well, I see Hiltz nodding.
Is that correct? It's not.
Let's make sure if we have.
I want to make sure
Mr.
that
Becker
is
said it does. No. It expands it in the individual market. Senate Bill 1 expands it in the group market. But this one goes a little further, and it expands it in the individual market.
Senator Carter, yes, that is correct. The bill is ambiguous. There is a reference in the bill that the provisions of Senate Bill 1, now codified at 743-700, apply to this mandate. But there is the ambiguity in Section 2, Sub 1 that I previously mentioned.
Exactly.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kotek.
Thank you. If I could just jump in here. I guess I don't see it as an expansion because that would assume, the way I read this, if the individual plan is already covering services that are within the scope of practice of the counselors and therapists, it's already being provided by the individual plan. We're not asking the individual plans to include services that are within the scope of these folks, so therefore you then can reimburse them. It's saying if you already do those things and it's within their scope of practice and you're already paying licensed social workers to do it, you will also pay these folks. Am I misreading that?
Senator Carter, Representative Kotek, the phrasing is actually in the disjunctive. So if an individual plan is providing services for any of the listed provider types, all of whom except physicians are mental health providers, but if you provide services in an individual plan for a physician, and it doesn't say mental health services, it just says physician services, then you must also provide LPC, LMFT coverage.
May I follow up?
Please do.
And thank you for the clarification, except the scope of practice for a physician and a licensed professional counselor and a marriage family therapist are not the same, so I can't imagine. I understand that you would cover physician services, but unless there's an overlap with the scope of practice there, it doesn't automatically include what the counselors could be reimbursed for. But I appreciate the clarification.
Senator Carter and Representative Kotek, this gets back to an amendment that was offered by the insurance carriers and was not adopted, and that has to do with a clarification that the services provided, where it says on page 1, line 8, coverage for services performed by, the amendment that we offered clarified that it is coverage for behavioral health services provided by any of these provider types.
Could we have the number of that amendment? Do you know it?
So bear with me a moment.
Julie, you have it? Do we have that with
you? Okay, we don't have it.
Okay, it was on the policy side. That's what we don't have. Let me tell you what I'm going to do. The chair is going to volunteer, and I'm going to ask the vice chair to volunteer. I want to put together a work session with Mr. Becker,
and whatever three members of your organization you want to do, so we can talk after this. And we'll start meeting on Monday. Preferably, and we can talk about that as soon as this committee is over, we'll talk about what it's going to be a good time. But for me, it's going to be early in the morning because I have duties. So, will the committee be open to that?
Madam Chair.
Okay, Senator Gordley, then Representative Morgan.
Yeah, I support what you're wanting to do, Madam Chair, because I understand that you also strongly support the bill.
That's
and
right.
Want to get it into work session and move it out of committee, which is what I also support. I'm just reflecting on some of the testimony that we've heard here this morning, and I'm wondering, and you all at the panel helped me, and Ms. Brophy helped me as well. I'm wondering whether we need a greater focus among all those who make up the mental health treatment community, a greater focus looking at how collaboration is taking place, how referrals are being made. Does a forum exist where that conversation takes place or can take place, or does a forum need to be created? That's my question. I'm very much aware that what we're trying to do here is advance access to qualified mental health professionals in our state. But is there a place where you all get together, whether you're psychologists, psychiatrists, licensed clinical social workers, licensed marriage and family therapists, psychiatric mental health nurse practitioners, licensed professional counselors, etc., where you get together and you hash these kinds of issues out? Does that take place someplace?
It's ironic, isn't it? You'd think mental health professionals, the ultimate in communicators, would bridge that gap, and that doesn't often happen. I can speak from a community mental health agency that under that umbrella, I'm working side by side with LPCs, with licensed clinical social workers, because those are the lower cost professions. But you're right on, Senator Gordley. There needs to be more collaboration, and though it's also already part of statute that, at least within a community mental health setting and context, every time a client comes for services and there is deemed medical necessity for a diagnosis, we automatically immediately get a release to contact the primary care physician. And so that bridge is gapped by law, and that happens on a, obviously on a regular basis. So just so you are aware of that.
Madam Chair.
I have Representative Morgan and then Senator Morissette.
Madam Chair, speaking of irony, the one issue that has been brought to our attention from the fiscal perspective around the investigator, we haven't even got to yet.
could we get to that?
Senator Morissette.
We're back where we started when we were in my committee. We met before the final hearing and decided, and I left the choice up to the group as to whether or not they wanted to go with Dash 5, and they decided they did not want to go with Dash 5, and so we moved the bill without recommendation to Ways and Means.
Right.
Now, I agree with Senator Kotek and Representative Kotek and Boone that I don't think this is a significant fiscal impact. I think it's minimal in terms of premium rates, but we're dealing with the technicalities right now. And so if you want to be a technical purist, there's an issue here. I was kind of hoping this would get through without tearing the scab off the wound, but we did, and so I think it can be resolved, and I'll leave it to you good officers to do that, and I would do whatever I can.
Okay. Further questions? Okay, thank you, guys. Let's call Ms. Cooley out. Welcome.
Hey.
Chair Carter, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Julia Cooley. I'm the executive director for the Board of Counselors and Therapists. Should I go with the question first?
Well, you can do your presentation, then you can answer a question.
Okay.
Whatever you forwarding remarks you'd like to say.
I think what you would want from me is very, very brief.
Okay.
In terms of the revenue impact, the revenue impact is really neutral. That's because the board is fee-based. Also, just an amazing piece for people that a significant number have not been able to make a living wage. And the coalition, which represents all of the different kinds of counselors and therapists that practice, is in support of a fee increase. This is really pretty big for folks that have really, I think, unfairly suffered some barriers to their ability to earn a wage. So that in terms of revenue, I know that Deborah Manthe has brought up or been very clear about concerns about a position being put into this type of bill. I hope that can be worked out and it can, you know, go into an appropriate process like she has suggested. I wanted to make one point and not to go further into this, Jeff Carter and members of the committee. I've met three times bugging the insurance division. They're non-biased. They don't support a bill or not. I met three times because I had to try to understand art major here, a code that's real thick. And I would suggest, Madam Chair, not to be overly bold, but maybe a little bit, that perhaps Gail Woods from the insurance division, part of the enforcement piece, would be added to your group if it indeed does go forward. It's my understanding, and I won't elaborate, and I actually can quote the statutes, and this was working with Gail on this particular issue of what does it cover, what would the dash 5, what would be the outcome be in terms of coverage. Both ORS 743-709, which specifies that psychologists would be reimbursed, includes individual, it's right in the statute. 743-714, the bill for clinical social workers, also includes individual. So then a lot of homework, but really would not be the person to respond to this. Clearly in statute, and three people that this is what they do as a job in Oregon, in terms of the insurance division, very non-biased group of people have explained these types of coverage. And it isn't simple, I found, to really be able to understand them and understand the implications, that you really do need the interpretation because it crosses different statutes, so it gets a little bit difficult.
Thank you. Representative Morgan, you mentioned that we didn't broach the subject of investigator, but Ms. Sophie, when she first got up, mentioned that by them being willing to increase their fee structure, that it would pay for the investigator.
Notice in Ms. Manthe's analysis that they have a somewhat large ending balance that is outside of the range that we try to go for, and so I was just curious whether there had been any work done on the amount of the fee increase that would be necessary.
Ms. Manthe.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, I'd want to be clear that part of the one of the amendments that as you work this that LFO would bring in would be to remove the requirement for the investigator position, and therefore it removes the fiscal of the bill and any needed discussion of a fee increase. And it's really, as I tried to say in the beginning and not very well, is that it's more of a technical issue. I don't see the position as being tied to and I know we say it's not expanding service, but allowing licensed professional counselors and marriage
therapist to be reimbursed by insurance. It has nothing to do with an investigative position. Currently, the board, that's more of an appropriate conversation and staffing issue to take place in the budget. Mm-hmm. And currently, the board has the authority to hire people. They contract for investigative services, and if that's not adequate, that would be the place where Ms. Cooley and the board should raise that issue, and I will say that they didn't raise it when their budget passed through the Education Subcommittee. Further to address your point, Representative Morgan, the reason they have a higher than usual end imbalance is because of the renewal cycle. They do it in April, and therefore when you end the biennium in June, they actually need a higher end imbalance to deal with cash flow issues. The agency received a current biennium supplemental increase to get through this biennium of $100,000. So there's a lot of financial management issues that we need to look at globally before we start adding positions incrementally in other substantive bills.
Was there a reason why this investigator position wasn't introduced into the budget process?
Chair Carter, Representative Morgan, to be as brief as possible, when an agency goes through this process, and I thought about this, and rightfully so, if you put forward, and I believe that we had several packages that did not go forward, but if you put forward, for instance, several different positions that you need or different kinds of funding that you would need for a database for different parts of your program, the problem can be, from the agency standpoint, that I and the board and others involved, including the coalition, then it would not be prioritized the way that the agency would have. And therefore, the first and the most prudent issue would be funding an investigator and having an investigator. This has been something with this board, contracting for investigators, and I can provide that in the work group and not take your time now, but it doesn't really solve any kind of problem. The Clinical Social Worker Board and this board have recruited for over a year to find someone, an experienced investigator who would contract with the board. We went to a recruitment in the newspaper, and so the contracting is really not something that has worked out for either of the two boards. And so I can go further. We have lots of statistics. We've grown by 54% since 2002. We've staffed since 1996 with two FTE and had 54% increase. So I'd like to be able to address those things. There are many different needs in the agency would not be able to come forward, including revenue. It's my understanding from the board's accountant that the ending balance is would suffice the board for about 3 months, which was requested. And so it's the first time that I've heard that it is more than we need. I haven't seen the fiscal analyst report that was written for the board.
One thing I want to say that the investigator's position, is not an option. In order to be a qualified state agency, you have to have an investigator in such a sensitive area.
That is not correct, unfortunately.
Okay. And why is that not correct?
Because if I misunderstood you, Chair Carter, what I'm understanding is that when you have a regulatory agency, it would come in that, of course, you would need to have an investigator. Or did I not understand?
That it's not negotiable whether you do not. And I was saying it's not negotiable that you have to have one.
Correct.
Yes, that's what I was saying. Okay.
Further comments, Ms. Murphy?
No.
Okay. Why don't you guys just wait out here once you're through, and then Representative Bowman wants to say something. Vice Chair Bowman. Further comments. Okay.
I do want to acknowledge Mary Lou Brophy.
Mary Lee Brophy. I'm saying her name twice. There must be two of her. She's an incredible advocate and champion for all of mental health, or advancing mental health treatment in the state of Oregon. And she's been a wonderful participant in the Mental Health Caucus, which has been meeting weekly in the Capitol since the beginning of session. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Kudos to Ms. Brophy. Further discussion?
May I make one additional comment?
Okay. Doctor, come up and give your name again.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. It's Dr. Nilsen once again. A one-minute comment pertaining to the costs that the insurance companies are concerned with. On the green handout, quote 5, let me read that. Mental health costs are small, predictable, and stable. Research indicates that mental health costs are a small percentage of total health care expenditures, and that utilization of mental health services is predictable and stable regardless of a policy's generosity.
We didn't get one.
We don't have a green handout.
Oh, or maybe it's white.
Okay.
I think it's the yellow.
Or yellow. Mary Lou, I love the color coordinate.
Okay, read again. The medical cost offset, is that the one you're talking about?
The yellow sheet.
It's the yellow sheet. Thank you. I have the full article that many of those references come from. This is an article published by the APA, American Psychological Association, in 2006, and it's entitled Medical Cost Offset. I'd like to leave this with the board. There are 6 copies of it. I want to make a point that 14 insurance companies do reimburse LPCs and LMFTs in Oregon. I would like to think that these companies do this based upon the reality of medical cost offset, which is that expanding the pool of available mental health providers actually does reduce medical expenses. The national trend now is not to limit your provider panels. The old trend used to be, or the old thinking that insurance companies used, was we would rather have 10 busy psychologists than 20 halfway busy people because they would drum up new business. That's the old thinking. The new thinking, backed by data, suggests that these costs are very small. Admittedly, there are the startup costs, there's license verification, there's some data entry costs, but these costs that the insurance companies are concerned with, they're actually very minimal costs. And thank you for allowing me to make that additional comment. And I will leave the full APA article reference that pertains to cost savings through mental health services. Thank you.
Yes, I'd like to just make a note that Mr. Becker did say that the cost would be minimal.
Minimal.
So I want to note that. Without ado, further questions, comments? Thank you very much. We'll close the hearing on House Bill 2687A, and we will come to the conclusion of this committee.